Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. This evening, our guest is Mary Joyce. She has a very fascinating website called skyshipsovercashiers.com, and it seems she has not called in for some reason. I'm going to see if I can call her straight from my Blog Talk studio. I haven't done this in so long. See if it'll still work. Hang with me. 828. Just dialing in the phone number now. And we'll see if this will work. Doesn't look like it's working. Very strange indeed. Oh, well, that doesn't want to work. I have a clip. I'm going to play some clips and try to see if I can narrow down and find our guest. May just take me a second here. Who knows what's happened? I've got an interesting clip about a spiral galaxy with a secret.
The NASA ESA Hubble Space Telescope, with a little help from an amateur astronomer, has produced one of the best views yet of nearby galaxy Messier 106, a striking spiral galaxy with a number of secrets. Located a little over 20 million light years away, practically a neighbor.
Well, it looks like I may have Mary on the line. 828, is this Mary?
Yes, it is.
Welcome to the show. How are you doing?
I'm doing real well, thank you.
We haven't chatted in a while. I thought it would be good to touch base with you again. You've got so many interesting things going on down there in North Carolina. Well, let's start with, this is not exactly North Carolina, but it was posted on your website where there was recently a fleet of UFOs that were seen in Louisville, Kentucky. Did you want to comment on that one?
Well, we briefly talked about that before the show, and the reason we thought your listeners might be interested was because there was a fleet that was seen over Louisville, Kentucky on September 19th, and it was flying north-northeast, so it was kind of, it would have gone over Ohio, so you may have listeners who maybe saw the fleet. But if you want to see, go ahead.
I had a very strange and amazing sighting a couple of weeks ago. These were very bright, reddish-orange orbs that were big and very clear. It could have been Chinese lanterns. I don't know, but I saw like six or eight of them. It was an amazing sight. I don't trust my cell phone camera. I would have tried to get some film of them. But the photographs that you had on your website of these UFOs didn't really look like what I had seen, but I just thought I would.
Yeah, it was only a 48-second video, and it was actually preceded by a larger solitary UFO that went across first, and then the fleet came through. And if your listeners want to take a look at it, they can go to the website that I edit. It's called skyshipsovercashers.com. And on the home page, there is a search bar. And type in the article name, which is Fleet of UFOs over Louisville, Kentucky.
And isn't it crazy that we don't hear about this stuff? I mean, you'd think.
Well, that's why shows like yours exist, because of you're getting out information that mainstream still won't do. So you're doing a good service to people.
Well, I'm glad you put this website together, because it's really, I think it's important for people to have some place to keep track of this information. Because I think when you look at it over time, you start to think, look at all these strange things that people are seeing. I mean, there's a lot, you know what I mean?
Right. I don't know if I got them all, because I had one of those awful computer crashes, so I had to get a new computer that isn't even up yet. So I would have checked on this more clearly. But we have had four different videos of UFOs in fleets, and some of the fleets are big enough that you can't even count the number. If you have listeners that have a pencil, I'll give them the titles if they want to see these things.
Go ahead.
It's two fleets of UFOs caught zipping around the moon. And what was interesting is that these two different fleets were only like a minute apart. And the entire video is 9 minutes and 31 seconds where, you know, somebody was, one of the dark sky watchers was keeping an eye on the moon. But it was a pretty good-sized fleet. And again, the title is Two Fleets of UFOs Caught Zipping Around the Moon. And then we had another one, the title is Live Video from the International Space Center Reveals UFO Fleet. And you don't have to spell out International Space Center. It's just ISS. Live Video from ISS Reveals UFO Fleet. So those, and there's one more that I can recall. And the title on that one is Video of UFO Fleet Over Mexican City. And there were at least 25 UFOs in that group. It was pretty hard to count them.
These videos,
they were coming in from the,
These videos, do we type these titles in the search bar on your main screen?
Yeah.
Skyshipsovercashiers.com. And then you can just type.
Right.
Okay. Then you type in, for example, one of these titles. Can you give one of these titles again?
I can give them all again if you want me to. The one that would be closest to you is called Fleet of UFOs over Louisville, Kentucky. And that had to head over Ohio. So, you know, maybe somebody happened to catch that. The second one is Two Fleets of UFOs Caught Zipping Around the Moon.
Two Fleets of UFOs Caught Zipping Around the Moon.
Right. And a third one is Live Video from the ISS Reveals UFO Fleet, and ISS stands for International Space. And the last one is
You go to another website or another link, or it's all on your site, isn't it?
Yeah, and then there's just a click button. You click on the button, it takes you right to the video.
That's very interesting.
Now, another thing that's kind of interesting, you do a lot of research, so you may be familiar with a weatherman by the name of Scott Stevens. He's known for talking about chemtrails and HAARP and weather wars and weather manipulation. And what I found interesting was that he was quoted in the Russian paper Pravda, and the title on that Pravda article was U.S. Scientist Says Scores of UFOs Fly Around the Sun. And Scott has checked into all the photos available through the SOHO satellite system for NASA. And, it's interesting. You sometimes have to go to other countries to get information. This is a short quote from him. He says, I am confident that UFOs are flying in the vicinity of our sun. I'm talking about a fleet of UFOs operating near the sun. I believe that both NASA and the U.S. government are aware of the existence of a certain civilization whose spacecraft are capable of resisting extremely high temperatures.
Isn't that interesting?
Yeah.
Hmm. Now, I'm watching the video, which I guess was shot at night. The fleet of UFOs. Wow. Now, let me stop this. This is amazing. So there's a larger ship, and it's moving upward, right? And then there's...
You're talking about the one with Louisville, right? That's headed
yes.
for Ohio, that one? Mm-hmm.
There's like a circular one that's a little larger. And then there's this out of nowhere comes this group of little lights in the sky, and they are just moving like crazy.
Right,
now,
and they're moving in your direction because you're in Zanesville, which is northeast of Louisville.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I'm just 10 miles north of Zanesville here in the state park, but, you know, this is a fascinating video. This was taken with a pretty good video camera, too. I mean, at least it looks like it was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, this is very, very interesting. Wow.
And I personally found the one where it showed two fleets only a minute apart going around the moon. I particularly found that one interesting.
Now, for some reason, I could not find that one.
All right,
two fleets going around the moon.
And I can't help you because I have a new unwrapped computer. I can't even check something for you. But
Do you think that there was any foul play with your computer getting whacked?
I don't like to go that direction unless I have no other option. The hard drive had a lot of use and had a number of years under its belt. So in computer worlds, it was old enough to probably give out. So I'm not going to jump to conclusions. In the past, I did have one incident with the first computer I had with the website, and it really was a mystery. I unplugged that particular computer every night so that it wouldn't get zapped by, you know, an electrical surge. And I had written some stuff that I needed to look for the next day. And when I opened up the computer the next morning, after it had been unplugged all night long, all of my UFO files were gone. Everything else was there. And I called in a man who was helping me with my computer at that time, and he is the one that at that time was servicing Western Carolina University and with all their computers. So he really knew his stuff. And it just mystified him. He went into the bowels of the computer and couldn't find a trace of those files. And he had never seen something where just one section of information disappeared. But I haven't had that happen since then.
Yeah, for some reason, when I look at your website, I never click the videos. How silly of me, because some of these videos are fantastic. Now,
well,
you also have videos of these UFOs, and they look like they're spraying things. And
yeah,
and then you've got videos of, like, flying crosses.
Mm-hmm.
These are crazy. It's just
yeah,
amazing.
Yeah, we try not to put on just any old video. It's got to be one that kind of grabs our attention and, you know, stands out in one way or another. And both of the ones that you mentioned kind of stand out for their uniqueness.
Yeah, yeah. Do you think some of this could be photoshopped or?
You always have
the first
wonder about
one
that
we were talking about with the two fleets near the moon or whatever. That didn't look photoshopped at all.
No,
I'm not trying to shoot these videos down at all, but like these. Okay, I'm looking at the flying cross, but that is pretty stunning.
Mm-hmm.
That's really pretty stunning. I'll put the link in the chat room. That's pretty amazing. Who knows? You know, that's all you can say.
Yeah, with the
who
website
knows.
That we have, there's either photos or some kind of visual or video with the stories. The website is set up with the concept of like a magazine, and nobody wants to just read the Wall Street Journal and have nothing but gray type. And so we always try to find visual things to go with whatever stories we post.
That's a very smart thing to do. I'm watching this strange cross fly across the sky.
And you should tell people it's flying horizontally. It's not upward like we normally think. It's perfectly horizontal flying.
Man, there's another one. That is so strange looking. Now, this is like a parking lot of cars and a gray sky. It's just before sundown. And what is coming through the sky is a perfectly clear flaming cross moving horizontally. It's just pretty stunning. Go ahead, Mary. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Well, yeah, well, when I've talked to you before on your show, we haven't really gotten into all the visuals. But another thing your listeners might find interesting is we have a section called Global Links, and you can find that on the homepage. And it's on the left-hand side, open up Global Links. And the quickest way to get to some of what I'm going to tell you about is just go to the archives for 2013. And that was the year that we were contacted by a man in the Netherlands who was taking NASA photos or NASA videos and what he called dusting and cleaning them so you could see the images better. So we had the original images, and then he would clean them up so you could see them better. And not only are these UFOs around the sun enormous, and I'm talking bigger than Jupiter, they're also very structured. And I was very surprised to see that. So the best way that somebody could, you know, start plunging into that is go to the 2013 archives in the Global Links section. Go way down to the bottom and then scroll upward, because then you'll see things in the order that we got them or found them. And we also had some in 2014 and 2015. I have not heard from that man since then. So 2015 is the last time we've been able to get what I call cleaned up NASA photos. You can still sometimes catch the images, but they're blurry. And I'm sorry that I've lost contact with him.
The UFOs near the sun, I've heard people talk about before. It's a very interesting topic. And I'm trying to remember, and I'm embarrassed, in fact, that I don't remember the fellow's name. He worked at NASA. He wrote a book called Ringmakers of Saturn, and he studied these gigantic craft that he said were actually building the rings of Saturn, and he talked about seeing them travel from Saturn to the moon or to the sun and back. And oh, I am kind of a little embarrassed, and I'm just not remembering the man's name, but it'll come to me eventually.
Wish I could help you. I can't. I'm sorry. I've heard about it, but not enough to be smart about it.
Yeah. It's quite a story indeed. It's funny. I've gotten so interested in the one case in Switzerland with Billy Meyer and all of his writings and experiences. I've kind of gotten away from some of the other stuff, and there's still a lot of weird, amazing, fascinating stuff that's going on. Now, there's one photograph here of skyships spiraling around John Lennon's memorial. I don't know if you remember that one.
I do remember, probably an old one. Yeah, but it's pretty. And like I said, even the archives will have information that will be new to most people.
Right. Very, very interesting.
Go ahead. You're thinking.
Well, what about the typewriter ball-like UFO? Does that ring a bell? I mean, that was on your website, too.
Oh, yeah. I can remember the image of it. I can't tell you the date or any of that, and I can't pull up anything tonight. But I certainly remember the image of it. And
that's
the,
right. You can't look at anything right now. That's right. I forgot.
Right. And some of your, you know, I guess younger people won't remember it, but they used to have the old Selectric typewriter, and there would be these interchangeable balls with different typefaces on them, and they'd plunk the little ball in there, and then when you would type, the thing would just spin around and hit the letters. And that particular image just looks like one of those in very fast motion.
That's very true. That's really cool. Well, what else have you seen lately?
Well, one of the things that we've done since I've talked to you is we've ventured out and actually done one YouTube video. And it's we had a woman come forward who I've actually known for many years and didn't know her story. And when she found out about the website, she just kind of quietly told me, she said, you know, when I was a kid, my dad, you know, worked there, and I actually have handled some of the metal from the Roswell crash. And she had never talked about it. And I found it incredible that she had been so intimidated as a child that she was 69 before she decided to share the story at all. And we put that into a YouTube video, and we have her voice telling the story, so it's her actual voice. And then one of the gals who helps us with the website put a lot of images together with that, so it's more like a video than just a podcast. And if anybody's interested in that, the easiest way to find it is go to YouTube and punch in Two Kids Roswell, and it'll come up. It's about the magic metal, and it's just these two kids, about 10 years old, who get a hold of a piece of this from the father's private home office. And they had it for a number of days, and they did everything to it. They put it in fire. They, you know, wadded it up. They ironed it. They did chemicals on it. They just were little geniuses trying to make this, you know, have some effect on it. But no matter what they did, it always sprang back to its original condition. And it's a pretty good little video. We've gotten coverage on that in some of the British papers even, and I'm going to go blank on other places that have picked it up, but it's worth somebody's time to take a look at it.
Are you going to be doing more of these kind of videos?
Only when it can't be something that can be told well in a condensed written form with photos. And we just did an interview yesterday, and it's one of those where it's just going to be quite a story, and it's going to be the second one we put into a YouTube format.
Wow, so you got big news coming out?
Yeah, and it's one of the, I don't know, since, let me back up here. I've been interested in UFOs since 1987, and we have had the website, skyshipsovercashiers.com, since 2008. And believe me, you know, I've met and talked to many, many, many people. And those who have had experiences with the aliens and with the UFOs and our government, you know, who've really been intimidated in one way or another, often by our government, and it just is bottled up inside of them. And so when they finally find somebody who is willing to accept that they might be telling the truth and they can start telling their story, it just floods out. And I've seen this over and over again because these people are in one way or another traumatized, and nobody wants to believe them. Everybody thinks it's easier to say they're crazy. And they're just so relieved to be able to talk to somebody who will actually give them, you know, some respect and consideration. And there's, when people are telling the truth, there is a certain ring to it that just, you just know they're speaking from the heart. You just know they're telling the truth. And so he's talked about interacting with Kissinger. He's talked about interacting with Buzz Aldrin. He's talked about what Buzz Aldrin has seen on the moon that he doesn't talk about in normal circumstances. You know, it should be interesting, but we haven't even put it together yet.
Now, you haven't done the video yet?
We just transcribed the interview, or we just did the interview. So it's just on tape at this moment. It will get created into a YouTube video.
Very interesting.
It'll take a couple of weeks.
Now, Aaron from the chat room had put a link in as well, and I did a little Googling before I looked in the chat room, and the fellow I was trying to remember was Norman R. Berggren from NASA. He wrote The Ringmakers from Saturn, and I used to interview a guy a lot named James Horak, who had, you'll have to, you know, you may want to, I need to hook you two up. You should talk to James Horak, because he's, I'll put it this way, he's seen some of these incredible craft that come in and out of the sun, and he's had a lot of really strange experiences, and he knows a lot. So remind me, please, and we'll try to get you guys together. But anyway,
I
digress.
Send that information to my email. I will get on the email, hopefully within the next day or two.
Okay, excellent. Excellent. And I think we talked about the UFO that was hovering low over the North Carolina River, right? Did I bring that up?
Not tonight. We've had that happen a couple of times. The UFOs seem to follow a river that goes through Dillsboro and basically Dillsboro and heads Tuckasegee River in North Carolina. But that could very easily be a man-made UFO following
the
river.
Sure. I mean, that doesn't make it any less mysterious.
Right.
So
yeah,
much...
but we always have to be careful because we're more advanced than the average person thinks we are as a country, and with our technology.
Absolutely. And I love the picture on your website of the UFO that is silver and metallic with all these portholes, and you said it turned like a merry-go-round. Does that ring a bell? That's too old.
Right now, it's not coming to me.
That's interesting. What about the snake-like strands?
Wait a second. The oddest one we've ever seen, and we've seen many different kinds from Cashers, which is, I'm about 35 minutes away from Cashers. Cashers is at the top of a mountain, and it's one of those communities where a lot of people come when the weather's nice, and when it's cold, they all go back to Flatland. But there's a lot of UFO activity up there, and we've seen just every shape that can be imagined. The most unusual one, and which I've never seen on a YouTube or any place else, looked like a rock or a meteor. And it wasn't like zipping across the sky. It was hovering in the sky. And it wasn't really lit up, except you could see it from the light on the ground. And we do have pictures of it. And again, I'm not going to be able to tell you exactly where it is, but it would be under Skyship Photos. Maybe 2015.
Oh, okay, yeah. There's a lot of good.
But it
organized into years, right? 2015, 2016, 2014.
Right.
You've really been very dedicated to this website. Very good work.
Thank you. And my old newspaper background's coming through, I love the newspaper business, and this is sort of like today's version of the newspaper in a way.
Okay, I mentioned this briefly. These snake-like strands that appear, very clear strands of light close to the ground, and they're standing vertically, just kind of suspended. Does that ring a bell?
Yes, it does. And there were that picture was taken that you're looking at, there had been UFOs seen in the sky for several days in that area, and what looks like something permanent was just a flash that the camera caught. It lasted just momentarily, and it looks like a strand, kind of a little bit curvy, but vertical, and it's just above the ground. So it's like
that's
something.
That's very weird. It was just.
Oh, it's weird.
Wasn't there more than one photograph?
There could very well have been, yeah.
But they didn't really see that? They only caught that in the photo?
Yeah, she saw it. She saw that, the woman who took
it. She did see that?
But it just lasted momentarily.
And what about the strange numbers that appeared in the sky, 1619,
yeah,
holograms?
Isn't that gives you much to ponder, doesn't it? I don't have answers to all this. I really don't.
I'm sure.
But you can see, we have a series of photos there, so you can see how it changes from numbers, and you can see it in the transition stage.
Isn't
that what you're seeing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, of course, we talked about this before, the lady that saw the hologram of Jesus, and she heard this banging noise on the side of her house.
Right.
she saw this 30 to 35 foot tall, what looked solid, didn't it? Gigantic image.
Yeah, and it was in the, she said it, she was able to judge the size because she knew the height of her house. And it was about 35 feet tall, 30, something like that. And there were tall trees in the background. And it stayed there for some time at this moment. I can't remember how long, but it was more than a few minutes. And it was like animated. It was like his hair, which was more of a, let's say, an auburn color or brown with a hint of red to it. And it would, like, blow in the breeze. And the thing that she described, the clothing and the sandals and all of that, but the thing that always stuck in my head was that she described a leather pouch hung around his neck by like a leather strip of leather, I guess. And I've never seen Jesus depicted that way in any art anywhere. And yet, if you think about it, at that time, they still had money and currency, and perhaps that's the way they carried it. But that kind of rang true to me because it hadn't, I had never seen it before. It wasn't like somebody bringing their imagination to what they were, you know, talking about. And also, she was raised Jewish, so she wouldn't have had a mindset to create a Jesus figure in her backyard.
You know, I have to throw something in here, Mary, that I have discovered within the past year or so that you may find really strange and a little bit disturbing. If you go back historically and you look at the development of language, the letter J and the J sound did not appear until about 1550. The letter J was invented by a guy named Gian Giorgio Turrisino.
Right, and Jesus' name was spelled with a Y.
Yes. In the early, there was, I mean, I hate to say this because it really offends people, but his name wasn't originally Jesus.
No,
now,
it
I don't know.
It was Yeshua or Yeshua.
Yeah, people, you know, you can make an argument that his name was Yeshua, or you can make an argument that his name was Jesus. It's in the 1611 version of the King James. It says, Our Lord and Savior, I-E-S-V-S. So the Latin, the Greek, it was mostly depicted with the I that was pronounced with the Y sound. So I just, when I studied that whole thing, I found that very strange that we suddenly changed the way his name sounds.
Yeah,
you know?
I don't know how to explain that one. But he's
Isn't
also known by other names in other parts of the world. In the Far East, he was known as Isa or Isa, I-S-A or Isa.
Yeah, I-E-S-O-U-S sometimes, or Jesus, or the Meyer material says his name was Emmanuel. And if you look, the book of Job was originally the book of I-O-B. James and John also had names that started with a Y, and these names are almost unpronounceable to us, and maybe that's why they changed them. I don't know, but I just find that very disturbing that they would go in, and who knows when it was done. I assume it was done around 1600s, because even as late as 1611, he was still referred to as I-E-S-V-S. However they pronounce it. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
But isn't that
strange?
I do.
It is. But, you know, he's been known by many names around the world. I got in, there's a book that I did, excuse me, called Tangible Evidence of Jesus Left Behind for Us to Find. And it gets into the scientific, archaeological information that's been discovered about him that goes way beyond the Bible. And I do have some information in there about the many names that the Indians of the Western Hemisphere had for him. And they would describe him in the same ways that people describe him in other parts of the world, usually with the lighter hair that had, they would say things like copper tints or hints of the sun, and with lighter eyes that were sometimes described as very changeable, like the ocean. And they would call him the prophet. Each of the tribes gave him a different name. He seems to have traveled from the South America all the way up into Canada, and each tribe came up with their own name for him. But the description of him physically is the same, and the stories that he told often reflect the ones that we hear in the Christian Bible. For example, he talks about the little lost lamb. And in the Indian tradition, they talk, I think down in Peru or someplace in South America, they talk about the little lost llama.
Oh, really?
So, and these stories, these ancient legends, predate the arrival of the white man. So it's not like white men bringing over their Christian stories and the Indians pick them up. The legends predate the arrival of the whites.
Have you ever done any research on the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD?
Yeah. And they what they did at that point was, you know, they called in all these bishops or leaders of the church from the known world, and Constantine did it, and
right.
he wanted to get rid of conflict in his kingdom, and so he wanted these people to get together and agree on things. And part of the reason that the halo was developed around the saints was because that was bending to the sun god, which is what the Roman people believed in. So they were trying to blend the Christianity with the sun god worships, and it's kind of interesting that way. And they also had all sorts of written material, which you can call gospels if you want, about Jesus and the Jesus stories and the Bible stories, and they made decisions about which would be put in and which would be taken out. And in my book, Tangible Evidence of Jesus, I've got a list of, oh, God, I can't remember anymore, maybe like at least 50 different gospels that were written, and, you know, we're only left with just a few.
Wow. Crazy. I wonder how much has been left out that would be very interesting or very useful.
Makes me wonder. Since we're going off on the Jesus thing, let me do another thing. They have found what they call the Jesus family tomb, and they have excavated it. And it was a tomb built into like the side of a hill. And the tombs at that point, you would walk in and have like a center section, and they would have these niches on three of the walls. And the way they buried people at that time, and it was a very short period of time in history during the time of Jesus, and when somebody died, they put them in this main room and left them in there for about a year, and then when they would open it up, all the soft material of the body would be gone, and they would gather the bones and put them into what they called an ossuary or a bone box. And then those would be put in the niches off the main room. Well, the tradition at that time was the most important person in the family would be buried to the right of the entrance. As you walk in, to the right would be the most important person. And in this tomb that they call the Jesus family tomb, there are three of these bone boxes or ossuaries in that first niche. And there's inscriptions on them. Now, I'm going to give it to you in English, but one says, Jesus, son of Joseph. One says, and it's in the familiar form of Mary, and it has the title before it. It's Mara, which is the equivalent of Lord, the feminine form of Lord. So that was in there. And then there was a third box that said, Judah, son of Jesus. Those three bone boxes were in this same niche, considered the most important niche. In some of the other niches on the other walls, there were other names that were family names of Jesus. And James is one of them, I believe. But anyhow, it's quite fascinating. And they did find some bone chips, I guess just little tiny particles inside the bone box. And they compared the ones in the one of Mary and in the one of Jesus, and there was no biological connection, so it wasn't his mother or his sister or any kind of blood relative. which further, makes the point that it would have been his wife.
And one more thing,
and we'll get off this subject, and that is at the time of Jesus, in order to be a rabbi, you had to be married. And in order to teach children, if you were a man, you had to be married. Jesus was called a rabbi, and he also taught children. And so in his culture, he would have had to be married to have that title.
And where was this tomb located that you were describing? Jerusalem?
It's outside of old Jerusalem.
Yeah, very interesting side tangent. I like that. Another interesting side tangent, and I have notes about this, and you can correct me if I just invented this somehow, but I think somewhere on your website you talk about Aldous Huxley and his novel The Brave New World set in London. Am I wrong or right?
I don't recall that. I've forgotten a lot of things too, but that's not ringing a bell.
Oh my goodness! I thought this was so interesting what you had written here.
Go ahead. Maybe I'll find it interesting too.
It says the abolition of natural reproduction. Human embryos in the future will be raised artificially in hatcheries. Educating children by this hypnopedic process, which provides each with appropriate subconscious messages to mold the child's self-image into the appropriate social caste. The discouragement of critical thinking, where the lower castes are bred for low intelligence and conditioned not to think, the upper caste. Does this ring a bell at all? I mean, you had all this interest.
No, I don't think that's from our website.
I think you said that last time I talked to you too, but I have to try to find it because I don't
if
think
it's on
I mean,
there, please let me know.
Okay. Your website is huge. People need to know this.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, it is.
You've done a lot of good work there. Now.
But it's easy to navigate. It's not.
It is easy to navigate. Have you had anything on your website about floating cities in the sky?
And they're most likely holograms. And there's been a lot of testing of holograms. The ones with the cities, the ones I'm familiar with are the ones that have been in China or in that part of the world.
Mm-hmm.
At the moment, I can't think of one that's like here in the United States. But it looks like a city in fog, kind of like what I've seen. And there's a lot being done with holograms. I know that one of the things that people are concerned about is in order to manipulate people and control people, the idea of creating holograms of religious leaders. And
sure.
For the Christians, it would be Jesus. For, you know, it'd be the Buddha. It would be, but something
sure.
that people would get all, you know, I don't know, reverent about, and that
sure.
it would be used to manipulate people. So
right.
they have that capacity, and, you know, we just have to be careful.
And you guys near Cashiers, you have this huge UN facility that's beneath Mount Mitchell in North Carolina, correct?
It's in Western North Carolina. It'd be about 2 hours away from Cashiers.
Oh,
but
it's
Western
that far.
North Carolina,
I didn't realize it.
Okay. Probably. I'm in Sylvan, and I think it would take me an hour and a half to get there. And, that's a whole big, huge story. I don't know if you want to get in that direction or not. You call the shots.
Well, let's talk a little bit about it. I think it's part of this. Somehow I find it related to your website. Correct me if you think I'm wrong.
No, you're absolutely right. And I've done a book. It's called Underground Military Bases Hidden in North Carolina Mountains. And I have featured five of the underground facilities that I'm aware of, and the witnesses on all of those, for the most part, have been former military people who seem to know what they're talking about. And there's a whole network of underground facilities that are connected by tunnels underneath these mountains here in North Carolina, and most people are pretty darn confident it extends all the way up to Washington through the Appalachians.
And something tells me we are getting close to the time when the elite are going to start using these bases in a more public way. Can you comment on that?
Well, I don't know about being public, but we're finding more people moving into near building homes near these underground facilities. And we did a story this year. I'm lost at telling you exactly where to find it, but we did a real interesting interview with a real estate person who was very aware of the people buying in this area where the underground facility is. And most recently, a major general out of the Pentagon bought a home there, and I have been there, I have seen it, and he doesn't live there. You know, it's just a place he, you know, he can go if he has to, and it's easily accessible to an underground facility.
Do you think he bought it as kind of a, like an
safety
escape,
thing,
like a safe place or
yeah,
something like that?
Yeah, there's no one thing with these underground facilities. They originally were used to survive nuclear attacks or some kind of a natural disaster. There are people that are very credible people that say that Nibiru or Planet Nibiru, however you prefer to say it, or Planet X, is a reality. And on the website this year, we've done articles where we've quoted people with really good credentials who say it is real and it is coming and it is causing, it is ultimately the reason why we're getting the warmer temperatures. And there was a article that came out of MIT quite a number of years ago, actually, and said because of Nibiru, even Pluto is getting warmer, and somehow they're able to measure that. So it's not just a man-made phenomena, and it's a cyclical thing. And you know, humankind has survived the passing of this Planet X before, and we will probably survive it again. But it can be quite devastating, and you know, people on the coast don't usually survive if it really comes close to Earth. And there are many people saying that this is the reason so many of the elite, whatever you want to call them, are moving close to these facilities.
Do you think that this planet is getting closer, or has it already passed us?
I don't think it's already passed us. I think it's coming closer.
It seems
and the best
like it...
pictures... The best pictures are the ones that are being taken from Antarctica. And, again, somewhere on the website we posted pictures that were taken by, it wasn't our base. I'm trying to remember which country it was. But another country has an exploratory base down in Antarctica, and it was their pictures. And like I said earlier in your show, so often we have to turn to other countries to get straight answers. But you can see the pictures where clearly there's a sun and there's a, you know, another well-lit object. But it's only,
I remember,
it's coming, it's approaching us from our southern hemisphere. So it's not instantly, you know, credible here in this part of the world.
Do you think we're going to be able to see it with the naked eye?
I think so eventually.
Hmm.
And I think that's having an effect on our weather, and we're having extremes in our weather.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that's the only reason. We have humankind trying to manipulate the weather. A bunch of years ago, maybe right around 2000 perhaps, I met an elderly man at the place where I was working at the time, and he would come in on with some regularity, and we began to talk. And eventually he told me that he was one of the people involved in developing HAARP. And he said it was designed, the original concept was designed to design something that would be a bloodless form of battle or war. So weather could be used to defeat the enemy rather than killing people. and it would be, you could create a drought in an area so that it would be hard to survive. You could create storms in an area that would, you know, incapacitate the efforts to the enemy to attack. And that's probably going on now and has been for some time.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure. No doubt about it. I read an interesting article on your website a while back about a man, it might have been a Native American man that saw a giant in North Carolina that looked like a cyclops. Does that ring a bell?
Listen, yeah, and I wasn't even going to post that story, but something in me said, go check with the elder Indians at the Cherokee Reservation, which is real close to where I live. And I met with he's the highest honored Cherokee, and they have a special name for him, and it's a title. And I talked to him about it, and he said, yes, that was a reality. And so even though it's far out in my mind, and even to this day it's hard for me to believe that there might be a cyclops, you know, in the mountains around here,
right,
based on the endorsement of this particular man, I decided to post it. Now, I do know from people who graduated from Western Carolina University that in their forensic storage lab, they have two giant skeletons that have six toes. Now, whether or not that would have been a cyclops, I doubt that. But, you know, I don't know. Some of these things are just strangely, I mean, they're just strange. And I don't have answers to all of
them. The place you told us that has these giant skeletons, do you remember how tall these giants were?
I don't recall the person telling me, other than that they were giants. The thing that stuck in that person's mind was the giants had six toes.
Do they allow the public to see these skeletons?
No. No. In fact, it's kind of interesting. We always think of universities as being a place where you get educated. But what I've experienced here is that they're more concerned about building new buildings than preserving ancient prehistory. And
yeah,
that was especially true when I did the book about the Cherokee Little People. And I'd never heard of that until I moved to North Carolina and didn't give it much attention. And one day, a well-respected man in the community who was, late 80s at the time I met him, he said, you know, they were real. And he, as a young man after World War II, had been involved in the construction of buildings on the campus. And throughout that campus, when they would cut into what is supposedly virgin land, they would find these little tunnels. And they would be square cut except for the top. The top would be rounded. And anything that's rounded on the top would make it more structurally sound. And they also found little skeletons. And one of the professors for many years had a small skull on his desk that he used almost like a decorative paperweight. And he said it was a child's skull. And another teacher came by one day and picked it up and looked at it real carefully and said, this is not a child's skull. It has all of its wisdom teeth. And there's a whole lot of stories. But anyhow, the book that I, it ended up being a book because nobody had written about it. You know, I'm not one of these people who writes books just to write a book. That's not where I'm coming from. But when I found that nobody had recorded this information and all of these witnesses, which I ended up getting 11, most of them at the time I met them were in their 80s. And there's most of them have passed away.
Wow.
So I just wanted to save that information.
That's very interesting stuff. Yeah, I love the information you have about the giants and about the Cherokee, the little people. They're not seen anymore, are they?
Well, I didn't think so, but then after the book came out and the first place I spoke was at the Cherokee on the reservation at their library, and when they realized that this white person wasn't making fun of little people, they came up and started talking to me afterwards and indicated that in the more remote parts of their land, they will still, they claim to still have little people. And then I got a call from a man who lives in eastern Tennessee, And he said that there are little people living on his land, and their family has owned that land for at least 200 years. And
wow.
And the land is on up on, you know, rolling hills by a river. And they've had interactions. He can remember his father and his grandfather being able to talk to the little people. So Evelyn Gordon and I, and she is a co-founder of the website, we went to his land because he sounded really legit. And we were able to get pictures of the little footprints. We were able to get quite a few interesting pictures. I didn't see the little people, but there was, you know, evidence. It was a really good story. I had to divide it up into four stories. So on the homepage, there's a section called ETs, Bigfoot, and Other Beings. And in there, this year, there are four stories in a row all about the little people of eastern Tennessee.
Mm. Well, Mary, it's always a pleasure to talk with you. The time has gone so fast. We've only got 4 minutes left, so please tell us again.
Okay, let me way, because there's so much to talk about, is just remember the website. It's skyshipsovercashers.com. If people want to learn more about the books, I've got a brief synopsis under Editor's Corner. And just scroll down to the very bottom of Editor's Corner, and there's information on each of the three books, and all of them are available through Amazon.
Well, thanks, Mary, and I hope we chat again soon. Have a great evening.
All righty. Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.